You're listening to Catalyze, a podcast from the Morehead Cain Foundation at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Caroline Leland, producer and host. This season, we're focused on alumni who have made history. And today you're going to hear from Jim Exum, one of eight members of the first class of undergraduate Morehead Cain Scholars, the class of 1957. Jim is also a former Chief Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court. After attending law school on a full scholarship at New York University, Jim practiced law in North Carolina until 1967, when he began a term in the North Carolina House of Representatives. Jim was the first Morehead Cain alumnus to be elected to the North Carolina House. The same year he joined the House, the governor appointed him resident Superior Court Judge in Guilford County. In 1975, Jim joined the North Carolina Supreme Court, where he eventually became Chief Justice. Jim wrote more than 400 opinions for the court during his time of service. In the mid-90s, Jim returned to private practice. As a lawyer, he has helped brief and argue more than 40 appeals in state and federal appellate courts. Throughout the early 2000s, Jim served as a distinguished jurist in residence at Elon Law. He taught law as a professor there from 2000 until his retirement in 2018. Jim has received multiple awards for his commitment to civil liberties and justice.
My name is Jim Exum. I'm retired from the Supreme Court in 1994, and I was Chief Justice at the time of the court. And I'm retired from teaching at Elon Law School and retired from practicing law. I live in Greensboro.
And you're from Snow Hill, North Carolina. What was it like growing up there?
It was wonderful. It was a small town of about 1,000 people. Growing up in a small town like that is, I think, just a terrific experience and a terrific way to get your bearings as a young person. You know most of the people in town, most of them know you and know your parents, know your grandparents, and it's really the best way for you to, for a person, any person, to gain confidence as they grow and grow into maturity and to understand, know who they are. So I found it very comforting as a place to be and grow up, and I still look back on those years with real fondness.
What are some of your favorite memories from Carolina?
Lots of good memories from Carolina. Where to begin, you know? In my junior year, I was appointed chair of the Men's Honor Council and served in that capacity my senior year. That was a learning and maturing experience, if there ever was one. You know, we had to hear cases against fellow students for honor code violations. I recall that experience with, sobriety, really, because it was not an easy job, but one that I think helped me in my maturing and in my growth. And I suppose it was one of the things that I did that made me think I might want to be a lawyer.
Are there other ways that you feel the Morehead Cain has helped lead you to where you are today, has influenced you in your career?
Absolutely. I think having won the scholarship and to have that on your resume and as part of your background opens a lot of doors. And it helped me get my first job, which at the time was with Justice Denny on the North Carolina Supreme Court. But when I finished law school, I also had a job offer from a New York law firm. It was the Wilkie Farr firm, Wilkie Farr Gallagher, Walton and Fitzgibbon. So I had to choose whether I wanted to stay in New York and be a big firm New York lawyer or whether I wanted to come back home and be a North Carolina lawyer. And I finally decided the latter and accepted the job offer from Justice Denny. And I remember when I interviewed with him, he called my attention to the fact that I had been a Morehead Scholar. That meant something to him.
Mm-hmm. When you look back at your career, all the different things that you've done, you've got such a long career. What stands out in your memory as times that you felt most proud?
I suppose the best time professionally that I spent as a lawyer were the 20 years I spent on the North Carolina Supreme Court. Those were great years. I liked not only the work that I was doing as a member of a 7-member court, but I liked so much the associate justices with whom I was working. They were just fine, fine people that were a joy and pleasure to work with. And I had that privilege for 20 years, 8 of which I spent as Chief Justice of the court. But in those years, several cases stand out that I worked on and helped decide. There were a couple of cases where dealing with workers' compensation issues, when workers get hurt on the job. We have a workers' compensation law in North Carolina that allows the worker to receive disability payments. But one of the issues that occurred while I was on the court was, what do you do with these workers in the cotton mills who develop chronic obstructive pulmonary disease? We call it COPD, because they breathed in so much cotton dust on the job as workers in these mills. But they've also breathed in other things, like some of them were smokers, so they smoked cigarettes. Sometimes they had asthma unrelated to the job. So how do you figure out how to compensate them? Do you compensate them as if they were totally disabled, which they were, you know, all these things combined made them totally disabled, but the cotton dust wasn't completely responsible for the disability, and the cotton dust was the only job-related causal factor. So what do you do? Well, I thought that we ought to have a formula that said something like, if the cotton dust is a substantial cause that significantly contributes to the disability, then the worker ought to get total disability, even though other causes also contribute. But for several years, the court disagreed with me on that and said, no, we're just going to give them compensation as if they were only partially disabled because of these other factors that were not work-related that entered into their breathing problems. Well, the doctors in these cases were testifying that it was almost impossible for them to quantify the contribution of each of these things to the person's breathing problems. The doctors were saying, all we can do is to say yes or no to the question of whether the work-related cotton dust exposure significantly contributed to their breathing problems, which made them totally disabled. So I kept trying to persuade the court that a decision which would make that a meaningful testimony and would help us resolve these cases was the best way to go. Finally, the court agreed with what I was saying, and we had the case of Rutledge against Toltex Corporation in 1983 that I wrote for the court. It was a 4-3 decision that adopted this idea of allowing total disability payments if the cotton dust significantly contributed to the disability. And that was a memorable moment in my work on the court.
I know you've also done a lot of research on state constitutions.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? What have you found in that research, or what did you find in that research?
Well, I found that the North Carolina Constitution is a very rich source of law. We only have about 3 sources of law fundamentally. the state constitution, the federal constitution, statutes, state and federal, and court cases, state and federal. And our state constitution is just a very rich source. Its provisions are more detailed in many cases. They give more guidance. The intent of the framers sometimes is easier to ascertain. These provisions predate the federal constitution because our state constitution was adopted long before the federal constitution was adopted. And there's also another interesting thing about the state constitution. If you're concerned with the protection of individual rights, many times these rights, like the right of free speech, the privilege against unlawful imprisonment, right to be free from unreasonable searches, these provisions appear many times in both constitutions, both the state constitution and the federal constitution. In the state constitution, the provisions are worded slightly different. They're, as I say, sometimes more detailed. But if a state court is interpreting its state constitution, it can always accord more protection to the individual than maybe the federal document does, as it has been interpreted by federal courts. So a state court can give more protection to its citizens under the state constitution if it wants to, than maybe it would be the case if we were only applying the federal constitution. Mm-hmm. We can never give less. The federal constitution sets a floor below which you can't go.
Right.
But we can always give more protection under the state constitution if the state court is so inclined.
What are some of the things you like most about the U.S. Constitution?
Well, I think it's probably the Bill of Rights, certainly. I think there were key provisions that were added some years after the other parts of the Constitution were adopted. So I would have to go with the Bill of Rights.
Do you have a favorite amendment?
Well, I think this would not be unusual to favor probably the First Amendment. That was the First Amendment. I think the framers probably thought it was the most important. That's the guarantee of free speech and free press and freedom of religion. These are the great freedoms that we enjoy in this country because of the Bill of Rights. I also like the Eighth Amendment, the amendment that gives us the privilege of not suffering cruel and unusual punishment. It limits the punishments that we can mete out to people for violations of the law. Mm-hmm. So that's also one of my favorites.
If you could go back in time and join the Founding Fathers as they were writing the Constitution, do you think, is there anything that you would have wanted written differently?
Yes, I don't think they did a good job of handling the race question in this country. They sort of skipped it. They gave it short shrift. They didn't like to talk about it. And when the Constitution was written, a large portion of our country was engaged in the slave trade, and slavery was legal everywhere. I wish that they would have done a little bit better job providing for the eventual abolition of that awful situation. Many of the framers didn't like slavery. Many of them didn't own or were never involved in it, although a number were. But it would have seemed that they could have come up with a better handling of that racial question, which was certainly before them. They knew it was before them when they provided that slaves would only be accounted as They were not counted as full persons. I think they were counted as three-fifths of a person or something like that. And that was just, I think, not a good idea. And it just helped to prolong an institution that I would have hoped the framers could have done a little bit better job of saying at least eventually we want this to go away, and we're going to say that after a certain period of time, slavery is going to be illegal and something like that.
Right. That makes sense. So I want to hear about your time teaching at Elon. I read that you're quoted as saying that was one of the great privileges of your life, and you were there for a number of years. Could you tell me more about that experience?
Oh, it really was. No doubt about it. I was active at the school from the very beginning. I was on the initial founding board of advisors, and then they called me a jurist in residence. And so I was there from the very beginning in that capacity. I wasn't teaching, but I was sort of acting as a consultant or advisory, in an advisory capacity, both for the dean and the administration and for the students. And to the extent that they wanted to speak with me, my office door was always open to the students. I enjoyed interacting with them. I was still practicing law, too, actively. And so this was sort of a part-time thing at the law school. But I was practicing law with what was then the Smith Moore firm here in Greensboro, doing appellate work, mostly appellate litigation. But my being involved with the founding and helping to get the Elon Law School off the ground, working with the students, working with the teachers and the faculty, was a really wonderful privilege, and I enjoyed that a lot. And then finally, later on, I actually became a member of the faculty formally. I was a professor of the judicial process and actually began to teach a full teaching load. And that was, teaching was simply something that I had no idea it would bring as much personal joy and personal satisfaction as it did. I loved the classroom. I loved helping the students through their legal training and helping them to resolve legal issues and helping them learn the law, basically, in the disciplines that I was involved in, which were evidence. I taught evidence. I taught criminal law, taught trial practice, appellate practice, and just to see them, you know, discuss something and argue about something and answer my questions and then question me, and I would try to answer their questions. This colloquy that went on every day in the classroom was just a joy. To see them grasp something for the first time, see the look in their eyes when they finally got a proposition that we were mulling over or discussing, and then reading their exams, their answers to questions, and to see how well some of them had really grasped what I was trying to get across. It was just a wonderful feeling, and I'm sure in the end I probably learned more from them than they did from me, but it was just overall, it was one of the real privileges of my legal career. I'll always look back on it with a lot of fondness.
That does sound wonderful. Throughout all these years, I know you've also been pretty heavily involved in a number of different community organizations. And I was wondering if you could speak to that, about what motivates you to be involved with the community. And have any of those activities, do any of them stand out as particularly meaningful to you?
Sure. One of the things that I have enjoyed is being a member of the board of the Paul Green Foundation. Paul Green has always been a hero of mine. He was a great writer, humanist, wonderful thinker. I always admired his vigorous and consistent and eloquent anti-death penalty positions. He was, for all of his life, opposed the death penalty, as have I. And he was very strong about it, wrote about it, So I've always admired him for that, and I've liked his outdoor dramas. He's just a really great North Carolinian. You know, he was a Carolina graduate, loved Chapel Hill, loved the school. And so being on the Paul Green Foundation board and also working with the other really fine, delightful members of that board, many of whom are scholars in their own right and authors, has been a pleasure. Also, have been active in the North Carolina Bar Association. That's been a big part of my extracurricular work. Was co-chair of their Committee on Judicial Independence and was served on the committee as a member for many years. Co-chaired it for, I think, a little more than a year, with Buddy Wester, a lawyer in Charlotte, who's also a Morehead scholar. And we worked very hard to come up with better ways of selecting our judges than the political method, particularly the partisan political method, by electing them in popular elections. We recommended various forms of merit selection, which would involve screening judicial candidates by an impartial, politically balanced, ideologically balanced group of people, and letting those people recommend names to the appointing authority, which would be the governor. Mm-hmm. We recommended it and did the best we could. So far, we have not been successful, and I'm no longer on the committee, but I liked again the people I was working with and the cause for which we were working. Then, I belong to a couple of tennis clubs. Tennis has been an important part of my life. I still play. I've been playing since I was a teenager. And so belonged for a number of years to the Sherwood Swim and Racquet Club. This was back in the 60s and 70s. And then I also belong to the Greensboro Country Club, where I'm a member now. And my main activity there is taking advantage of their tennis courts. And so I've enjoyed that.
That does sound lovely.
As you may know, one of the Morehead Cain Scholarship's four pillars is physical vigor. We love hearing about Jim's lifelong commitment to staying active and healthy. You've been listening to Catalyze, a podcast from the Morehead Cain Foundation at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We are grateful to Jim for sharing about his expertise in law and sharing his memories of the early years of the Morehead Cain program. Thanks also to Creighton Irons, Morehead Cain Class of 2005, for our fantastic theme, music. You can find more of Creighton's work at creightonirons.com. That's CreightonIrons.com. If you like what you've been hearing on Catalyze, please tell your friends and then rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks as always for listening.